I'm late. I had to stop by the Wax Museum again and give the finger to FDR.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria?
Well, it's a proud day for America. And by God, we've kicked Vietnam Syndrome once and for all. Thank you very, very much.
I say it again, you've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked.
These witnesses are trying to simply deny things that just about everybody else accepts as fact.
He came, he saw, he died.
Well, we ain't killing their army, but we killing them. We be on CNN like, say our name, bitch, say it three times.
The meeting of the largest armies in the history of the world. Then there's going to be an invasion.
All right, guys, time to welcome Gilbert Doctorow back to the show. He lives in Brussels, and his latest book is Does Russia Have a Future? And is a regular analyst on Cold War II issues, etc. And we're reprinting this one at antiwar.com. It's called Reordering Power in Europe, the Putin-Merkel Meeting. That's what we called it. Welcome back to the show, Gilbert. How are you doing?
Pleasure to be with you again.
Very happy to have you here and to hear your point of view. So, in fact, this comes up in the article. One of the things that I always like about talking with you is your summaries of the political talk shows in Russia and the take, you know, going on domestically there, their reactions to these same questions that we're constantly discussing. It always makes your articles very interesting to read, too. But so in this case, the news is that Vladimir Putin went to Berlin to meet with Merkel about the Nord Stream pipeline. And on the way, he stopped in Austria to attend a wedding. And so that may or may not be huge. I don't know. Tell us what's going on here.
Well, the point of my article, which was a rather lengthy review of information about these events on Saturday, the 18th of August, and the visits that Putin made, as you said, to a wedding in Austria and to a state visit or working visit with Merkel in Berlin. These, the elements of that were covered by European press, by the US press, and I did an overview. The discovery here, it's that because there was no press conference at the end of either event, the journalists and their editors were forced to deal with the facts and without having any guidance as to where the facts were going to go. What they have done at best is to give a dry reiteration of the statements made by Merkel and Putin at the start of their meetings. That is the shopping list of what they had to discuss. Or they talked about some particulars of perhaps human interest material. This was the case of the Frankfurt Allgemeine, which showed that mainstream publications can very easily turn into entertainment without information. That was the case when they gave the particulars of the Austrian foreign minister whose wedding Putin attended, this Karin Streisel. They spoke about how she swims a kilometer every day and how she has two boxer dogs and lives in a farmstead and is chauffeured every day with her dogs to the court office. This is very amusing and interesting, but totally irrelevant to the issues of state in front of us. At the same time, turning to the Russian talk shows, as I discovered, one show had on it the deputy chairman of the Association of Russian Diplomats, who was very factual, also spoke about the lady in question, but had information that is vital to know if you want to make any sense of Putin's accepting her invitation to a wedding, coming there as he did, so to say, on the road to Berlin. Those facts were that she's an extraordinary lady. She's a lady who happens to know a great deal about a region that is of particular interest to Russia right now, that is the Middle East, and could be influential and useful in attracting investments from Europe to Syria to rebuild and to bring refugees home. She's an expert on the Middle East because she grew up in Amman, Jordan, which is not something that you find easy to discover in the American, German, French, or UK press. You wouldn't know that. She speaks fluent Arabic. She has been a major professional and came to her position in the Austrian government as a non-party person, simply because of her professional credentials being so impressive and her being useful to the state. Well, there I'm giving you, in a nutshell, what it is that we find when we read the news. And to be honest about it, I don't want to be to just beat on the mainstream media. The alternative media often are not any better. One of the major points that I make, and it's at the very end when I'm so-called reading the tea leaves, though my point is that the events that we saw, this rapprochement of Berlin and Moscow, are a consequence of Donald Trump's policies. You wouldn't know that reading any of the, or most of the, American alternative news. You wouldn't know that because Donald Trump is assumed not to have a foreign policy. It's assumed that he's an idiot, and that what he does in the world depends on which side of the bed he woke up on. That is a very nice cartoon, but it is not a helpful way to understand the world that we're living in today. And my point at the end of the article is to draw some conclusions about the objective results of what Donald Trump is doing in the foreign policy area, even if the subjective side of it, what he thinks he's doing, doesn't quite correspond or match with those objective results. We live with the objective results, not with his subjective intentions. And the objective results are that the man is destroying the US alliance system. His critics in the establishment are completely right. Those few critics who take the time and get their minds around what Donald Trump is doing, and who have said in this or that place that Donald Trump, if you were trying to understand what the result of his action is, you would say he's destroying the US alliances. Well, he is. And by intent, and not just because he's a bull in a china shop. It's because he has a different vision of how the world should be run. And that is a vision that a good many of us have held close to our hearts. In fact, it's not something new. It was coming out of World War II. It was one of the two major trends in U.S. foreign policy or international relations. One was idealism, and the other was realism. This is the realist school, and it's a school which is based on nation states with sovereign rights that don't have fixed alliances, that rally together as realities change, as there is the risk of any one country becoming dominant or hegemonic. And to avoid hegemony, the others gather together. And so you have changing alliances, but that maybe is too strong a word. You have changing friendships in the world. And this is an approach, an understanding of the world that was very respectable coming into the 1940s, 1950s. And yet today, from the 1990s on, it became very disreputable. It was considered to be, in the words of Joe Biden, something old hat, old fashioned, as if ideas ever age and become worn away or useless because they're old. That is a line of reasoning that I very much like to pursue in a debate. I hold that ideas aren't old, ideas are right or wrong.
The Scott Horton Show is brought to you by books, particularly Kesslyn Runs, a new dystopian novel about the very near future by the great Charles Featherstone. Kesslyn Runs. Also, No Dev, No Ops, No IT by Hussein Bodakchani and the War State by Mike Swanson about the rise of the military-industrial complex in America after World War II. He also gives great investment advice at WallStreetWindow.com. And when you follow his advice, you'll want to get some precious metals, gold and silver and et cetera, from Roberts and Roberts Brokerage, Inc. That's at rrbi.co. rrbi.co. Also, check out Zencash at zencash.com or zensystem.io. It's a great digital currency, but it's also a messaging app and a document transfer app and all kinds of great stuff, too. Learn all about it at zencash.com. And then there's Tom Wood's Liberty Classroom. If you sign up from the link on my page at scotthorton.org, I'll get a little bit of a kickback there. And check this out. Speaking of scotthorton.org, if you'd like expanddesigns.com to build you a new 2018 model website, go to expanddesigns.com/Scott and you'll save $500. Also, don't forget the bumpersticker.com. Stickers for your band or your business at very reasonable prices. High quality stuff there. It used to be my company back when. Thebumpersticker.com. All right. Well, so, you know, there's certainly been a lot of fear on the part of the establishment that Donald Trump means to wreck the alliance system. And for my part, I sure would like to see it wrecked. You can't have world order without a world empire to enforce it. And I'd rather not. Thanks a lot. You know, for the cost of my own liberty and plus all the guilt and blood on the hands of, you know, the American population that have supported this quite willingly, much of it. So I would like to think that you're right about all that. And yet it seems to me like, well, what he's done is he's basically mocked the Germans and said, you're under the control of the Russians if you would, you know, go along with this Nord Stream plan instead of buying the gas from us. And by the way, I demand that you all buy more weapons, and especially from American firms, of course. And, you know, he's increased all the terror wars. He did back down on regime change in Syria. So that's certainly good. But he's armed the Ukrainians and he sent more and more troops to the Baltics and to Poland. And, you know, doesn't seem to have, I guess he hasn't picked back up the ballistic missile defense system in Poland yet. That's good. But he's been pretty hawkish, as the Atlantic Council actually admitted, quote unquote, in a thing against interests. So, geez, you know, for a Manchurian candidate, he really has actually taken as many or even more hawkish moves than his predecessors in terms of the new Cold War. So now you're saying, in effect, what has he done? So does that mean just the backlash to his ham-handedness on these issues, or what am I missing?
Well, to say that it's, that he's enacting in a ham-handed way is to suggest that it's clumsiness, that it's lack of skills, that it's personality defects, all of the things that his opponents like to attribute to him. I disagreed with that notion. I think that Trump is being not hawkish, he's being obnoxious. And he's being obnoxious because he wants to get under the skin of the people he's talking to and to push them away from the United States. Now, if he were to go directly and try to accomplish what I say is his ultimate aim, he would have been taken out some time ago. If he were to make a declaration that he wants to close out NATO, he wouldn't be here. He wouldn't be in the Oval Office right now. So what he's doing is very, very shrewd. He is using the tools of his enemies against them. That's to say, things like sanctions. He didn't invent them. They were going strong before he came into office. They're going strong independently of him by initiatives of the U.S. Congress. These initiatives by Congress are totally insane. And what Donald Trump is doing is taking them one step further, to the point of absurd. Now, I refuse to consider that he doesn't see that these are absurd, and they serve his purpose perfectly. No one can say anything about Donald Trump applying sanctions to our allies as he's doing to our rivals. Nobody can touch that. The president of the United States has the powers to impose tariffs as he will. And he's using that to destroy the alliance. I think that there's the problem with getting your arms around Donald Trump is that people who are very smart and very sympathetic to his attempted rapprochement with Putin and with Russia, some of my colleagues, they are all focused on one fraction, one part of the apple pie. Their own knowledge and interests are Russia. So it's Trump and Russia. Recently in the press, we've seen Trump and Erdogan. What people are not doing is looking at Trump and the world. And to understand or appreciate the relations with perspective relations between the United States and Russia, if Trump stays in power and if he wins a second term, you have to look at what Trump wants to do with the world, not what Trump wants to do with Russia. And of course, the whole thing is blown out of all proportion by the Democrats and their anti-Trump Republicans, who are focused on the Russia issue for their own very special reasons. Russia is a very small part of Donald's interests. His interests are to change the way the United States operates in the world environment. He believes that the United States should build up its military forces at home so that it can defend itself from home. That's pretty clear. And that is why he's so resentful at the drain on U.S. assets that these alliances represent, and none of them more so than NATO, where three quarters or more of the budgetary allocations for NATO are coming from the United States. Now, when you look at Donald Trump as this disruptive force in the existing international order, then he takes on a wholly different and very positive nature, as you were indicating a couple of minutes ago, in your own feelings about NATO and about the United States playing the world's policeman everywhere. I would not want to be distracted by, yes, how Trump reacts in Syria, how Trump reacts in this, because we're getting into minutia and missing the big picture.
Well, yeah, but I guess the part I'm missing is what difference has he made along these lines? He talks what to me is a good game about half the time in terms of we got to end all these disastrous wars and the Germans and the Poles need to pay their own way and this kind of thing. The only real thing he's done along those lines is open up relations with North Korea. But he's absolutely horrible on Iran, horrible on Palestine, Afghanistan, Yemen, Iraq War 3.5 still raging and still has Marines
in
Syria.
Let's go back, as I was saying,
has armed up Ukraine and has really escalated the NATO-Russia conflict as well. So I can see what you mean that he's disruptive in that he goes to these NATO meetings and he's rude to Angela Merkel and whoever. But what difference has it really made is the question I'm asking.
He's antagonizing everyone to the point where they're all looking for the exit. Now, considering the way these folks have been tied in to the United States and their whole careers have been made by being yes men and going with the flow, for them to be looking for the exit now took enormous impact.
Well, I mean, what are you saying?
Trump's
that Germany and France are looking to get out of NATO because of how rude he's been?
No, not because.
I mean, what do you mean looking
he,
for the door? Or?
Because he has. Rude is putting it at the level of personalities. He has been disruptive by not respecting the whole ideology of our values. He is openly contemptuous of the common values of democracy spread, of rule of law, of this good governance. He doesn't give a hoot, and he shows it. And now this, he is a walking fart in the church. And so it's more than his personal lip to Merkel and saying, pushing the chocolate across to her and don't say, I never gave you anything, Angela. And you know, there's much more than that. It's, he's showing up the European leaders for what they are, which is flunkies. They are outright flunkies. And he's put them in with their own domestic populations. He's put them in an untenable position because their servitude, their slavery to the United States is open to everybody to see. By the way he treats them, by the way he flicks the dandruff off of Owen's lapel.
So, in other words, you're saying that when Germany is doing the Nord Stream deal with Russia, that that's because of Donald Trump playing chess and making them hate us and putting them in the position where they have to do this or else lose face for being America's puppets instead of Russia's, as he claimed?
To look for other possibilities. Now, that is amazing. It's utterly amazing. But it's there for everybody to see.
All right, you guys, here's how to support the show. First of all, subscribe to the RSS feeds, iTunes, Stitcher, and all of that. All the feeds are available at scotthorton.org and also at libertarianinstitute.org. You can also follow me on youtube.com/scotthortonshow and sign up for Patreon. If you do, anybody who signs up for $1 per interview gets 2 free books from Listen and Think Audio. And also, you'll get keys to the new Reddit page, reddit.com/ScottHortonShow. And then if you go to scotthorton.org/donate, $20 will get you the audiobook of Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. $50 will get you a signed copy of the paperback there. And $100 donation will get you either a QR code, commodity disc, or a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think Libertarian audiobooks. That's all at scotthorton.org/donate. And also anybody donating $5 or more per month there, if you already are or if you sign up now, you'll get keys to that new Reddit group as well. Already got about 50 people in there and it's turning out pretty good. Again, that's reddit.com/ScottHortonShow. If you're already donating or you're a new donor, just email me scott@scotthorton.org and I'll get you the keys there. And hey, do me a favor. Give me a good review on iTunes or Stitcher, or if you liked the book, on Amazon.com. And the audiobook is also on iTunes, and I sure would appreciate that. And listen, if you want to submit articles to the Libertarian Institute, please do, and they don't have to be about foreign policy. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org. All right, well, so back to this the Nord Stream thing. You're saying that this is the result of Trump, you know, basically deliberately putting the Germans in the position of having to choose Russia over us or else lose face when he criticizes them for being in Russia's pocket or whatever, as he did a few weeks ago.
Exactly. And it also falls in line with another country you mentioned in passing, but I disagree with you. You mentioned like 6 or 8 countries. I don't know, one of them is vastly more important than the US, and that is Iran. By pulling out of the Iran nuclear pact, he was spitting in the face of the European allies. But this was more than, again, a personal...
Yeah, but maybe he was just sucking up to Sheldon Adelson.
I know. This is the way it's usually seen in the alternative media. And I understand why. But I'd ask you to draw back for a minute. Again, the problem with dealing with Trump is that so many of us have our own shafts, you know, our own... areas of expertise and areas that we like to develop, and that's very fine. But you have to look outside the shaft to other things going on. When I spoke about my colleagues in Russian studies who were very hopeful that Trump would bring a new golden age in U.S.-Russian relations, they don't look beyond the Putin-Trump thing to the other issues like Iran. Is there a war with Iran today? There isn't. Is there going to be a war with Iran? I don't believe so. I think that that Mr. Netanyahu does not control Trump. What we have is Trump hitting the U.S. allies where it hurts by threatening secondary sanctions against Europe for trading with Iran. That is repelling the U.S. allies.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to agree with you that he knows what he's doing with this. And I agree with you that I appreciate the effects of America's, you know, loss of power and influence here. I do agree with you that he is not, you know, a believer in the grand theory of American dominance of everywhere forever. But I think it's a lot less coherent than just a feeling, really, for him. But I'm sorry I'm late and I got to go here, Gilbert. But I hope we can talk again soon about this. Great article.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Really, really appreciate your time. All right. And you guys, the article is at antiwar.com. Reordering Power in Europe, the Putin-Merkel meeting, and Donald Trump, too. That's Gilbert Doctorow. All right, y'all, thanks. Find me at libertarianinstitute.org, at scotthorton.org, antiwar.com, and reddit.com/Scott Horton Show. Oh, yeah, and read my book, Fool's Errand, Timed and the War in Afghanistan, at foolserrand.us.